time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Fellas, have you started your spring cleaning yet? The carpets need cleaning, the drapes need dusting, and your lawn needs mowing. Spring has sprung, and the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming have the best tools for cleaning aisle 5 in your pants. Time to clear out your winter brush and join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off, plus free shipping with promo code GWC. Once again, manscaped.com, 20% off and free shipping on everything site-wide with my special promo code GWC. Hello everyone, and welcome back to an ongoing series where we're shining a light on some people who have some interesting projects coming out regarding Canadian professional wrestling history, and Canadian history as well. As with the flagship program Grappling with Canada, I am your host, The Taxman, and I'm looking forward to bringing today's special episode to each and every one of you a couple of days before the next episode of the aforementioned flagship show of Grappling with Canada is released. Before we get into my special guest tonight, just want to make mention that you can find Grappling with Canada as well as these special programs on any podcasting platform of your choosing, whether that's Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, basically wherever you buy, sell, trade, barter, or steal your favorite podcasts, you will find Grappling with Canada. And you will find these special episodes. Now, today's showcase is focusing on an upcoming biography on two influential people from Canadian professional wrestling history. Now, these two individuals are not they themselves Canadian. However, you cannot talk about Stampede Wrestling, Western Canadian professional wrestling, and the footprint left by these individuals after their big debuts in Stampede Wrestling. Of course, I'm talking about the British Bulldogs. Now, to join me in the discussion today is the author of the upcoming biography, Dynamite and Davey, The Explosive Lives of the British Bulldogs. I'm happy to have Stephen Bell on the line today. He's going to be discussing his time writing the book, all the research that went into a project like this, what the Bulldogs meant to him, as well as some interesting anecdotes and some dealings with individuals of the Stampede Wrestling family, we'll say. Now, there's a part of the conversation that I feel I need to preface before I jump into the conversation. I ask Stephen a specific question regarding family involvement and hesitation in regards to the British Bulldogs story. Now, this question was asked because, as many people know, there are less than favorable aspects of the British Bulldogs story. Unfortunately, these are the ones that seem to get a lot more attention, if you will, in certain forms of media. Therefore, I completely understand am completely empathetic that members of the families, friends of the Bulldogs, etc., would be hesitant to lend their memories and expertise to a project like this, simply because, unfortunately, families, friends have been burnt in the past by we'll say wrestling media. Unfortunately, this is not a new issue and something that I've come into contact with quite a bit in regards to the flagship program Grappling with Canada. In fact, that's going to be a thread that is going to permeate the next few episodes of the flagship program, starting with our episode coming out on April 1st. So, before we get into the interview, I just wanted to lay the groundwork that when that question comes up, it's not to disparage any family or friends who did not want to be a part of the project because they were worried that the project was going to, we'll say, twist their words around. And I think Stephen does an excellent job of kind of explaining the nuances dealing with family and friends in regards to sensitive subjects like this. And the way that he explains it is quite excellent. And the way that he went about it, in my opinion, is the way it should be. And it's the way that I've tried to present and tackle tricky subject matter in episodes that we have done in the past, as well as episodes that we are going to be covering in the future. Because unfortunately, as with everything in life, not everything is just, you know, sunshine, rainbows, and lollipops. There are the dark sides to everything. How we focus on those portions of the story, I think, is much more important. So I just wanted to clear that up before we get into the episode today. And I think you'll understand the path and the mindset and the framework that Stephen used to properly put things into context in terms of the overall story of the British Bulldogs. And I'm really looking forward to each and every one of you hearing Stephen describe what really turned out to be a passion project, to be quite frank. And you'll tell by his voice, he's very excited for it. And I'm excited for him to get this thing out there and really kind of set the record straight on a few different things. But before we get into that, just wanted to quickly shout out our sponsors of the show, Manscaped. Now, Manscaped has the full package you need for spring cleaning this year. The Performance Package 4.0 is the only tool that you need to keep your boys looking and smelling like the fresh tulips that your partner wants. To start off your spring cleaning, use the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer to get the most precise shave on your hedges. Oh, and it is waterproof, so don't worry about watering your grass with this tool. Equipped with an LED light, so you know it'll be a major asset to the new shower routine. Clear all your hose and smell the spring air with the Weed Whacker. This nose and hair ear trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. And after cleaning your nose, make sure you get rid of that foul ball smell with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner for your gimmicks. And make sure you finish off your grooming routine with the Plow 2.0, the perfect razor for the finest shave on your face. Unless you like looking like a caveman like me. Because if you're using the Lawnmower 4.0 on your balls and face, boys, you are doing it wrong. So, simply go to manscaped.com, use promo code GWC, that'll get you 20% off everything site-wide and free shipping. Once again, manscaped.com, promo code GWC for 20% off everything site-wide and free shipping. Now, without further ado, my conversation with author Stephen Bell. Please enjoy. All right, very pleased to be joined on the line today by the author of the soon-to-be-released book, Dynamite and Davy, The Explosive Lives of the British Bulldogs. Joining me today is author Stephen Bell. Stephen, how you doing?
Great, thank you, Andy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And it's funny, most of the program that I do is geared towards Canadian professional wrestling history, and you cannot talk about the professional wrestling history, especially in Western Canada, without bringing up, I should say, the British Bulldogs. But before we get into all of that and your research and writing towards the book, Stephen, let's hear a little bit about yourself and your relationship with professional wrestling.
I am a long-time professional wrestling fan from the UK, as everybody's obviously guessed by now. But being in my heading towards mid to late 30s now, unfortunately, my childhood memories are mostly of, you know, the early 90s WWF that we all loved and was sort of heavily geared towards. A family audience, shall we say, in that era, and, you know, all those kids at that age loved it. So, you know, Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart, and obviously Davey, as he was at that point, and the British Bulldog, as he was at that point, sorry. The Undertaker had just come on the scene. People like that, you know, that sort of era, Ultimate Warrior, Macho Man. You just could not help but fall in love with that. It just captured everybody's imaginations from my era, my generation. And then, I think, as I got older into my teenage years, I became heavily into soccer, and boxing, and wrestling sort of went by wayside. Now, obviously, looking back through all my research and everything that I know now, being almost turned into a bit of an historian on the subject, I now know that, obviously, WWF-wise, it was in a lull anyway during that period, so it's probably not just a coincidence that a lot of my generation, a lot of my peers at that time, it sort of did disappear a little bit off our immediate sort of list of priorities, I think. I think it was partly to do with his age, you know, partly thinking we're maybe a little bit too cool to be wrestling fans at
yes.
that age, and partly because it just wasn't the same product that it had been. It was sort of finding itself again. But then when I reached sort of 15, 16, 17, the Attitude Era came in, different story altogether. Once again, I was well in Vince McMahon's crosshairs as his, you know, prime demographic, you know, for that era. And so who couldn't possibly love, you know, Stone Cold and The Rock and obviously Trish Stratus and people like that, you know. So, yeah, once again, that absolutely captured my imagination. And by that point, I was becoming far more socially aware, far more geographically aware, just loved the product, but also became really, I think the first time that it really happened when I really got interested in the behind the scenes stuff was just at that time Mick Foley brought his book out, and that really sort of knocked down the doors for me in terms of knowing what went off behind the scenes and almost becoming more fascinated with that than the on-screen product at the time. And then Davey and The Undertaker, I think, were the only two who sort of transcended my two eras of fandom. So from being a child, you know, Davey was the British Bulldog,
yes.
sort of superhero-like character, and The Undertaker was obviously there as well. And them two were still about when I got back into it in sort of 99-2000. Obviously, I didn't know much about what had gone on in between. And so me and my brother, I remember we got into it such a big way, such a huge way that a friend of ours hadn't made the mistake of thinking he was too cool to be a wrestling fan for them years, and he'd carried on his fandom, and he'd curated a huge collection of VHS tapes of all the pay-per-views going all the way back to the original WrestleMania. And so me and my brother would bring sackloads of his VHS tapes in order. And so when we got to obviously WrestleMania 2 and then the following, WrestleMania 3 and the following SummerSlams and Survivor Series, that's when I first got introduced to the Dynamite Kid. Now, this is where I was completely naive and completely wrong because the British Bulldog, as I know him, Davey Boy, was so sort of fresh in my mind as this superstar that he was. I believed at that point that they'd probably just, you know, kind of grabbed any British wrestler they could find to put him with Davey Boy, so they could have the British Bulldogs, plural, as a tag team. I hadn't become fully aware of the timeline of it all, and I certainly hadn't become aware of who Tom Billiton and the Dynamite Kid was at that point. So I made that mistake of thinking almost that Dynamite was Davey's just sidekick, if you like. That's the word I'm
like a stepping stone almost.
And then a little bit later when I came around to reading Mick's book, Mick puts Dynamite over as probably the best in the world at the time, he calls him during his anecdote about the Bulldogs. And then sort of reading more magazines, reading more stuff, everything will become more readily available on the internet, which will come in more user-friendly then. I really started doing research. So this is going back over 20 years into just exactly who they were, found out that they were first cousins, which I thought was fascinating. Found out that, as I say, because I was going more socially and geographically aware of what was going on around me, I found out that they were from a small mining town in the north of England, just like me, only sort of 45 minutes drive away from where I was from. I found that absolutely fascinating.
Wow.
The characters that you see that I'd always been used to seeing both as a child and in the Attitude Era were all these sort of larger than life, from another planet type of people, characters, that it really sort of took me aback a little bit that these two guys were first cousins from a very similar heritage to me. So that's going back 20 years when I sort of met that link and became sort of enamoured with their story a little bit. And then Davey's death really sort of hit me hard. I remember that was just around that time when I was discovering all them things. And I'll never forget, you know, people say, I don't know if you have a similar thing in Canada, but I know sort of Princess Diana and Freddie Mercury are the two that I can think of where people say, I suppose, I know JFK's one for in the US, but they always say, you remember where you were when you heard that somebody had died. It was such the sort of like earth-shattering news. And I do. I'll always remember that about Dave. I remember exactly where I was when I heard the news. And I'd have been like sort of 17-year-old then. So I carried on being a huge wrestling fan for the years after that. It was many years later that I sort of stumbled across sports writing, became a published author, a multi-time published author. Everything I've done has been sort of really well received. And when my last book was a pro wrestling, a biography of a former pro wrestler, British pro wrestler from the pre-war era. But that sort of led to me discovering all them years later, after first becoming enamoured with the Bulldog story, it touched into it because it was about how it's the biography of Douglas Clark, who was the British heavyweight champion in the 1930s, and even the older version of the world heavyweight title. He was from my hometown of Huddersfield, and he was in winning that British title tournament that made pro wrestling so huge in the north of England. And then in the post-war years, when there was economic struggles around this area, that's when a lot of your shooters sort of got into the pro business. And Ted Bettley was one of them. And then Ted Bettley, years later, after retirement, opened his own gym and started training local youngsters. And that included Tom Billington, and then later included David Boy. So that research sort of touched base, and it felt a bit like sort of a bit like serendipity. And when that book did really, really well, it was really well received. And when the publisher came to me and sort of said, what's next? It just sort of felt inevitable that I was kind of surprised still that the Bulldog story hadn't been done, because I know so much about it already, and what a great story it was. The fact it still hadn't been done, I'd got a publisher there offering me to basically pick whatever I wanted to do next. it just felt inevitable that that's what I was going to do.
It's there's two points you brought up that are very fascinating. I want to circle back to. One is just in regards to, you know, you write your first book. There's the tendrils that kind of draw you into the British Bulldogs story that obviously, like you just said, makes it a natural fit to go right into writing the British Bulldogs story. It's interesting to hear, even from across the pond, right? With my program, Grappling with Canada, it's every every month's episode, although these people seemingly have nothing to do with one another, there's always something that draws someone to somebody else later on in a season, or someone to somebody else even in a different episode or whatever, that you would have no idea that they would be drawn together, but there is those tendrils. So very fascinating to hear your side of it, seeing these connections between wrestling generations, and also, you know, the way that you would research these individuals to put together in a biography. So kudos to you for those ones. And then the other point that you brought up, I think you're in the same boat as many of us, because we're roughly the same age, but we're all wrestling fans. In like the early 90s, we kind of fell off when the whole cartoon era was happening. And then, you know, Scott Hall walks out on WCW and everything is different again, right? And it's interesting that for you and myself, personally speaking, that, you know, we watch the Attitude Era, then we really get into the history portion of it, which I find is the more fascinating aspect of everything. And the one thing that you brought up is the books that are out there. And it's interesting because you touched on Mick Foley's book, because he obviously had a big portion of Dynamite Kid in his, I believe it was the first book, right? Have a Nice Day, was that the one that had that? Yes. So there's that. Bret Hart wrote a lot about Davey and Tom in his book. Obviously, Heath McCoy's Pain and Passion, there's a lot about the Bulldogs, but there's never been a dedicated biography of the British Bulldogs until now.
No, and that was obviously something that I could see was massively missing from people's bookshelves, wrestling fans and wrestling readers' bookshelves. As I say, I just think it's such a unique story with them being first cousins and from the heritage that they're from, to go on and take the world in the way that they did, being, you know, smaller men at that time in that land of giants. So many aspects to it are so fascinating, and I think so unique. I think a lot of wrestlers' stories have got, whilst they've all got their own unique nuances to them, I just think, and that's, other than, I think the main reason I went for the name The Explosive Lives of the British Bulldogs was obviously the play on words with dynamite, but I also do think it's got an explosiveness about it, in terms of them exploding onto the scene the way they did from their background, the way they did, the way they just took Calgary by storm, and then they took Japan by storm, and the WWF then by storm, and the tag team division by storm. I really think that there's a requirement for that sort of explosiveness and that link to be there in the title. Come on, what were your question again, Andy? I've gone off on my own tangent.
No, that's okay. But I was fascinated that for as many books and people who have touched on the British Bulldogs, that this is the first accounting, well, right?
I think because of the sad way in which their relationship ended, and kind of the sad way in which both their lives ended as well. Obviously, Tom had released his book shortly before Davey died, and was really quite damning of Davey in a lot of ways.
Yes.
When he wrote that in 1999. I don't think it could have ever been done, be it in a book form or a documentary form, whatever it might be. I don't think it could have ever been done almost while one of them was still alive, because as the researcher or the author or the documenter, you would have been required, if you'd have done it in, if it had been done in 2015, while Tom was still alive, there would have been a requirement on you for Tom to be your main part of research.
Yes.
And I think at that point, you've already sort of skewed your narrative slightly if you're wanting to make it completely balanced about them as a pair. And so, yeah, unfortunately, I do think it could have only really been done after they both passed away, or while they're both still alive. Obviously, Dave sadly dying so prematurely that there were never an opportunity for that to happen either. So, I think that's why it took so long to come around. And again, I think it was just sort of serendipitous that I was there at that point, in the point in my writing career that I am. and I'd just sort of finished that wrestling biography that I'd done, which had ended up teetering on the same subject. And it just felt like the right time to do it.
One aspect that you just brought up is the how easy it could be to skew a project like this. And this is an issue that I've had even in my own programs, because we've dealt with some subject matter that is very dark, including some upcoming episodes that really, they're stories that are hard to hear and hard to wrap your head around. And it's very difficult to present these stories factually and fairly without including any of the pre-existing bias, we'll say. How difficult was it for you writing this book and trying to separate the biases from the factual portions of the stories that you encountered?
Extremely difficult. You've worded that question wonderfully, and it has been extremely difficult, and it's got more difficult as it's gone along, to be honest, because I think with any project like this, it evolves as you're going through it. I remember doing, as all authors should do, for budding authors listening, you'll give yourself as rounded knowledge base on the subject matter as you possibly can, or you feel like you possibly can do at that point. And do yourself a real well-structured overview of what you're going to do. And I did that in the form of a chapter list that I'm going to do. And I mean, I only started off, I think it was with 25 when I did it at that point. I've ended up with 44 chapters. I originally declared that I wanted it to be 100,000 words. It's ended up being 125,000 words. So you can see where I'm going with this. It's sort of evolved as time went on. As I found out more, but also wanted to, for every bit of controversy that I put in there, or every negative story about either Dynamite or Davey, I want to add as much context as possible. I don't want to just it to seem like I'm jumping on some kind of bandwagon, or I'm just repeating ESA that's been said in past, negative things that I'd only sort of got from one source, that unless it were really robust, I didn't include, just because, depending on how negative it was, just because I thought, well, I don't want to just sort of it to appear like I'm just repeating that for the sake of repeating it.
Yes.
So I would always try and verify things if they were of a negative or controversial nature. And as I say, it's all about context. And I think, when you hear these sound bites, be it in shoot interviews or in other books, if you read them in other books, if it's like from somebody's third party point of view, so it might be in their book and it's just an anecdote about Dynamite or Davey, for example, you haven't got the context, you don't know where it is in the timeline of Dynamite and or Davey. You don't know what was going on in their life at the time, you don't know the context. So what I've tried to do is not just take that soundbite and leave it in isolation. I've tried to link all them together to create this sort of roller coaster ride, and explain to people what was going on in their lives at that time and the issues that they were dealing with at any one particular time.
Go ahead.
A lot of people will... Go on.
No, I was going to say, I love the attention to detail to, cross-link these sound bites with what has factually happened in the past, because, and this is something that I've brought up and encountered myself, is this whole idea of sensationalism in whatever the medium is. Obviously the one we're talking about today is writing and specifically doing the biographies. It's so easy to get wrapped up in the sensational headlines and kind of lose sight of what the actual end game is. So I love to hear that you have taken these different kind of things that have been out there in the ether and really try to expand upon and put them into the timeline and add the context behind them, because it's very easy to hear things and just run with it and never hear the backstory of it. And Lord knows people have heard, kind of the negative stories about the British Bulldogs in the past, because, unfortunately, negativity is so easy to just, it's just lazy reporting, right? Anybody can go and find all the negative stuff and put it in there, and it's, there's your book or whatever, and it's garbage. And people like yourself and myself and many of the listeners of this program would be able to right away spot that for what it is. So I appreciate that you're not shying away from that, that you're actually taking the time to in-depth explore why it happened, where it came from, and where it fits into the overall story.
Yeah, and what I've got from that, by doing that, I think I remember the first time I spoke about that exactly, almost word for word as we spoke about it, was with Ross Hart, and I think that's where we made a connection. I think he understood straight away where I was coming from, what I wanted to do in regards to that, and that's why we built up such a fantastic relationship. And what I thought was initially just going to be sort of maybe a 3 or 4 hour interview session with Ross, where he would, you know, give me a lot of his opinions, a lot of his thoughts, some anecdotes, like I'd already done with Bruce Hart. What that turned into with Ross was this, turned into almost a daily thing at one point, but probably more weekly on average, back and forth via email. I would send him almost a list of things. Look, you know, so questions or subject matters. Do you know anything about this? Can you verify that?
Yes.
And it would send me huge in depth. You know, if he knew, if he didn't know, it just obviously said I'm not sure about that one. But it would send me these sort of huge in depth replies, tell me everything he knew down to the finest detail that he knew it. I loved how his memory is so fantastic, and it got these sort of finer details down. On the issues that he was there and present for. And so that immediately gave me this, a little bit of confidence, where I thought, right, I've got this immediate sort of sounding board. I had a similar thing with Bronwyn Billington, Tom's daughter. Obviously, she was very young at the time, but she would quite happily go and ask her mum, Michelle, questions on my behalf, or anybody else really, questions on my behalf, and she would sort of come back to me with a little bit of a report or whatever. So I'd got this, that's when it really started to evolve, as I was talking about earlier, and expand, because I was getting new and exclusive stuff. Ross put me in touch with Keith Hart, who gave me this brilliant exclusive story that I didn't know, and I think it's quite early on in the book, and I think it really sets up quite a lot of threads that run throughout the book. I'm so proud of that. And yeah, that's where it really started to snowball and grow legs of its own. So, you know, we're another chapter here, an extended chapter there, next thing, where I thought I'd got lots and lots of time. I suddenly found deadline day, sort of a little bit intimidating, but I had the people in mind that I wanted to be involved, and I got most of them to be involved, and certainly with Ross and Bronwyn, I asked them to write the foreword and afterword respectively, partly because the effort and commitment shown and sharing the vision, I think, is the ultimate thing for me that I appreciated from them. You know, I explained early on, right from the word go, that I weren't going to shy away from the controversies, but I wanted to apply as much context as I possibly could, and I wanted to tell it in a way that it had never been told before. They sort of shared that vision and came on board, and was so helpful that I felt like the names almost deserved to be on the cover alongside mine, and so there they are as foreword writer and afterword writer. And so that's when I really knew it had come together better than I ever hoped, really.
Yes, meeting deadlines is unfortunately something I'm very, very familiar with on a monthly basis. So I know how frustrating it can be when you're, you know, you think you got something and you're waiting and you can't wait anymore, and you got to go with it. So I can appreciate the time and effort that you've put in, and what that really takes, and how much of a toll it takes on your, you know, kind of procedures moving forward with the project. So if anybody understands that, it's me. So I can fully appreciate where you're coming from in that regard. One thing that you brought up is a little bit of interaction with the family. And this possibly will be a loaded question, but I'm going to phrase it in a way that I don't think is going to be able to be taken out of context, if you will. So we've heard in wrestling history, we'll say, that some families are more involved with narratives that are presented than others. When you were writing the book, how did you feel about what the families thought about what you were doing, first off? And second off, did you feel any pressure from the families, without getting specific, to tell a certain narrative of the tales that were put in the story?
Yes. there has been a little bit of that. Yes. I was very sort of conscious about what about how it might come across and what the intentions were, and I were always very careful about how I worded things, and I think I'll use Bronwyn as the example. I'd reached out to Bronwyn, I think, with maybe an email and a direct message, and never heard anything back from her, and it took my in-depth conversation with Ross, in which I fully explained everything and where I wanted to come from, and then Bronwyn, out of the blue, got in touch with me and said, Ross has been in touch with me and told me that, you know. So I think all the guards are a little bit up that you just, you know, whatever, you're going to pull everything through dirt again or whatever it might be.
Yes.
So it did take a little bit of sort of breaking down them boundaries with some. I didn't. Unfortunately, again, we know I won't talk about anybody specific at all, but I didn't manage to sort of break down the boundaries with some people. Some people still, so I didn't want to contribute and didn't think that it was sort of a necessary thing to be doing. And that came with it sort of a little bit of third party pressure to not include certain things or present things in a certain way, which I understand and I get, and you know, I compromised as much as sort of I felt comfortable with.
Yes.
And then we sort of left it at that, but yeah.
And that's, you know, it's an issue that I've come across as well, in regards to, you know, the podcast program. You know, there are a lot of people who are genuinely happy to get their, whether it's their family member or it's their friend or whatever, to get the story out there, right? Warts and all, because, you know, and not everybody, we're not all Jesus, right? Nobody's lived a perfect life, right? And, you know, there's that whole, you know, don't throw stones if you live in a glass house thing, which I think really applies in a broader context with programs like this. But again, when you're coming from a position like yourself where you're trying to really portray the story truthfully, honestly, fairly, but also accurately, and accuracy is the big word that I can circle back to and really hit the hammer on the head for your book, and how, yes, there's the warts and all, but here's why it happened. Here's the broader story of why it happened, rather than just hearing, you know, and again, I know I mentioned it earlier, right? You know, just hearing a negative story and then it's carried on. And I understand why some friends and family would be shied away from getting involved in a program because they've been burned before, right? And I understand that people can be leery about being burned again. So I hope that the ones who had reservations will go out of their way to read the book and actually see the work and the care that was put in by yourself.
Yeah, that's sort of out of my control. I think that we've sort of got to the point where we've got to with that, and I just, you know, respect them, respect all their opinions, everybody's opinion. I think where I was coming from, as I say, I just tried to be as open and honest and clear about it from from the word go as I could be. And I think, you know, Ross has written the foreword, and Ross goes out of his way to mention in the foreword that he thinks it's sort of the most balanced view and retrospective of the Bulldog story that's been done, be it as, you know, even though it's never been done as the primary subject matter on anything really, you know.
Yes.
It's obviously it's appeared in a lot of other people's books. And yeah, I was so pleased to write that. There was obviously zero coercion from me for Ross to write anything that he might write, but he brought a tear to my eye when he sent me what he'd written. It brought a tear to my eye, I genuinely did, because I'd spent so long agonising over getting that balance right. It was something that me and Ross had spoke about so much, and when I saw that he'd written them words, it sort of made me feel like I'd probably got that about right. I think treading that line so carefully meant that there were always going to be people who thought it should be more one way or more the other way. I looking back now and knowing what I know now, I was never going to please everybody, and
yes,
fortunately, I tried desperately. but that's where I've ended up.
Now, as we'll kind of switch gears a little bit, because in terms of the sheer amount of information out there, I can only imagine the dossiers and files and everything that you would have had in regards of your research for the project. But without giving, naturally, a whole bunch of the story away, because I encourage everybody to go out of their way to pre-order, order, get their hands on the book. Was there one story that you found in your research that A, you didn't know before, and B, you thought was really integral to telling the story? Was there one specific thing, or is it something where you researched one thing which led you to another, which led you to another?
There were a lot of that, and as we said earlier, it's amazing how the sort of sound bites and the headline things that people will already know about linked together in such weird ways. So I found out in both Bruce Hart's book and in Bret Hart's book, they talk about the fact that Tom really opposed Davey coming over when it was first muted that Bruce were going to bring over Davey. Nobody ever really understood why, so I think I managed to get to the bottom of that, which I think people will be interested to find out. And just so, even though it's only a small thing, I think there's so many of them small things. So I found out so much more about the trademarking issue. You know, I think a lot of people
yes.
know about that. But I think the sort of almost lazy story is that David trademarked the name behind Tom's back and then sort of used it against him. And my research tells me that's not the case. I think people will be really interested to read what I found out about that and how I present that. So a lot of these sort of small things that are integral to the bigger things, if you know what I mean. I think that's what I'm most proud of, the way I've put it together. It sort of leaves all these sort of lazy tropes that have gone around over the years, or assumptions that have been made, and a bit of Chinese whispers where things have been said. Well, I'd say that these days. Where things have been said and then repeated slightly different, and then repeated again slightly different, and again slightly different.
Yes.
I think there's been a lot of that going on over the years, and hopefully I've shredded some of that away. So yeah, an awful lot of the small detail, which I think enhances the bigger detail.
Well, I, for one, can't wait for getting my hands on a copy of this book. Two things before we start to wrap up. When is the book due for release, and how are people going to be able to get their mitts on this book?
Right, so in the UK, it's only a couple of weeks away, April the 11th. The US and Canada, it's the 1st of July, which is a bit of a wait. However, there is two mechanisms in place that you can get it earlier, and that's through my own website, which is stephenbellwrites.com. The signed copy is available there. You can, you know, ask me to put any message on it you want or anything like that. I've just set up, because I knew I was doing this podcast, I've just set up a 20% off promo code, which is TAXMAN20.
Tremendous.
Rather ironic, I suppose, the TAXMAN getting money off. If you go on that and you can use the promo code TAXMAN20, 20% off, obviously that will counteract the sort of postage fee that's inevitably on that, because it's got to come over from me directly from over here. The other option that you've got is to contact Bronwyn Billington. She is acting as a bit of a vendor for the book over in Calgary. She's going to get some stock to sell, and if you contact her on Twitter, she's Dynamite Doll. She's going to be doing signed copies, signed from herself as well. So that's also another option that will enable you to get it, hopefully by either of them two options will enable you to get it hopefully by the end of April.
So StephenBellWrites.com is the direct access to yourself for some signed copies. I think that's super cool. I appreciate that you're adding that little wrinkle in there.
Yeah, great. Well, just an idea I had before I came on. So I want to make it as accessible immediately to as many people as possible. And I were a bit disappointed when I don't know the sort of politics and that goes on behind it, but the publisher really tried hard to make it so that it was the same worldwide release, but it just couldn't be done. Different. It has to have a different sort of process for every country that it goes in. But I really wanted it to be accessible to everybody at the same time. So that's why I set up these couple of different options that people might have.
Tremendous. And once again, use that promo code TAXMAN20 and save yourself a couple of bucks on a tremendous book that I cannot wait to get my hands on. Stephen, before I let you go, where can everybody get in touch with yourself outside of the website, StephenBellWrites.com?
I am at Stephen_Bell1985. I've already given my age away, so I won't worry about that. On Twitter, that's Stephen_Bell1985. But I've also set up a dedicated Twitter page for the book, which is Dynamite and Davy, or at Bulldogs Book 123. And I put some exclusive up on that a couple of times a week. I'll put, you know, a little excerpt from the book, or exclusive photo that I've been given by a family member that may or may not be in the book, with some background story behind it. So yeah, it's gone down really well, some exclusives on that. So yeah, if you give that a follow, and or my own personal one, feel free to get in touch regarding any book orders or anything else.
And if you look in the show notes of today's episode, you will also see all the ways that you can get in touch with Stephen, follow his various social medias. Listen, Stephen, this was tremendous. I cannot wait for the release of the book. Props to you for all the research and information that you are including in the book, and all of the stories are going to be cleared up. I can't wait to get my hands on it. And thank you very much for coming on the program today.
No, thanks for having me. Thank you.
Before we get out here for tonight, I just really want to again thank Stephen Bell for coming on the program to discuss his upcoming biography on Dynamite and Davy. This book, honestly, just has me salivating to learn more about the British Bulldogs and the true story of what happened in and outside the ring with them. Once again, you can go on to Stephen Bell's website, use the promo code TAXMAN20. For 20% off your order. You can find a link to that in the show notes for today's episode. You can contact me at 6_podcast on Twitter. You can email me 6sidepod@gmail.com. I read everything you guys send. You can find us on the Facebook group, Canadian Professional Wrestling History. You can also like the Grappling with Canada Facebook page. You can also find us on Instagram. Simply search for Grappling with Canada. On YouTube, youtube.com/C/Six-Sided Podcast. And you can also find links to support this program in the Linktree link. That's a lot of ways to say link. Oh boy, that's good stuff. But anyways, you can find all of those links. There it is again. Available in the show notes for today's episode. As well, you can also find ways to support the show via merchandise. GrapplingWithCanada.threadless.com is where you can pick up your merchandise for today's program. But until next time, which will be April 1st, if you're listening to this before then, for my guest tonight, Stephen Bell, I'm your host, as usual, The Taxman, saying take care of yourselves and each other. See you folks in a couple of days.